Now, do you remember that black mass that the Yamacraw encountered? Far larger than a man, the swirling black mass moved into the dimly lit room and drifted slowly to Ed's left side and came to a halt some 10 feet away. Do you have the capacity at this late hour on Sunday night to put yourself in Ed's place? Came to a halt some 10 feet away. As Ed watched, it appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, he could see that something was beginning to take shape. An entity was beginning to manifest in physical form. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly. You don't believe any of that. Still a whole bunch left. This ain't no fibonite guy. You'll see that in a moment. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly. I'll tell you, he's under attack because he's been engaged to explain the Amityville horror. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly to take the initiative before this fearsome black mass transformed itself into something even more forbidding and dangerous. Holding the cross toward what was now rapidly changing into a macabre hooded specter, Ed Warren stepped forward. Give him an A for guts. The moment he did, however, the entity moved defiantly toward him. Now, what would you do? Run like hell. That'll get you. Ed stopped and stood his ground as the form slowly drifted forward. When the swirling black mass was no more than a few feet away, Ed methodically and with absolute determination showered the thing in the sign of the cross with the contents of the holy water vial. Now you say, you believe in that crucifix and that vial? I believe I would have picked up any weapon I could lay my hands on. I'd have used Jerusalem rocks and water from Jordan. Now, you may say, well, now that's the best argument for having some of that stuff. Well, if you want it that bad enough, ask for it, and I'll get you some a lot cheaper than you're having to pay the other evangelists. But I really believe that it was the cannon he's about to fire that did the job. So you can have faith in a lot of things, and they become foci to focus your faith. But they do not become a substitute for the real cannon. Here's the cannon. Then he spoke the ancient command, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave." For eternal seconds, the black mass stayed motionless, no more than a foot away from the cross. Then slowly, it began to back off, though not before giving Ed a clear vision of himself and Lorraine involved in a potentially deadly automobile accident along a highway. That bad news was left. An accident that's going to happen. With that, the entity withdrew into the passageway from whence it came. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren as he stood sweating profusely in the freezing cold room. Yet, as he attempted to collect his thoughts, the vicious snarl of fighting animals suddenly erupted outside the house. Immediately, Ed realized there were no animals fighting. That visitation was still in progress. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs, We leaving somebody right now? Who in the world are we leaving now? I just saw an address go up. We're not leaving anybody now, are we? Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps. You over there at King's House 1, answer the phone. Give some comfort to these people when they call. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. Now, it was October. Let's leave that one there just a minute. Let's just leave it there a minute or two. A minute or a few. Am I boring you? It was October. I want to give these people some credentials. It was October 1972. By the way, they got involved in the Amityville horror case because a news station called them, asked them, because of their reputation. Here's another evidence that I'm not reading some paperback book. Now, I've said for years I've had great respect for the work that Lester Sumrall did in the Philippine Islands. I preached in Manila many times. I still remember you could get in a taxi in Manila, anywhere in Manila, in 1963 and say, take me to the Christ is the Answer Church. And every taxi driver knew where it was. Because of an experience that happened involving demons and a little girl in that terrible prison in Manila. See, I'm an academician. Academicians are trained to be skeptical. I learned how to question everything before I ever found the ability to and the guts to somewhere shoot the questioning engineer and start producing a life. I'm not your easy to believe kind of guy. I like to surround myself with people that are positive because I don't need any help in poking holes in things. I don't need anybody to release the chemistry of questions and negative things. I'm better at that than anybody. At least there ain't nobody better. But I believe in demons. And I believe in them beyond words. But lots of people give lip service to it. They don't know what's happening, when it's happening. They don't understand what the symptoms are to look for when satanic forces begin to invade a territory. And they don't know what it is that opens the door, and they don't know what it is that cultivates it, and they don't know what it is that makes it possible for it to move from invasion to oppression, to possession. And I repeat, I'm tired of the nuts camping out on this territory. It's like a lot of other subjects that's long overdue for the intelligent part of the church to pay some attention to. Even if you discard it, don't do it out of ignorance. The resurrection was denied for years because people said it couldn't happen. Therefore, anybody that says it did must be lying. Because the resurrection can't happen. So anyone that says it did, it's a poor reporter, not a good historian. So if there's a record of the resurrection, you discard that already because it's out of hand. Since the resurrection can't occur, anybody who says it did must be lying. I'm the guy that challenges everything. Man, was I a pain growing up in the church. I ask questions about everything. You can tell that. That's why I can't get through any place in the Bible without getting hung up on the little side issues. But I'll give these people some credibility. You were waiting for that, weren't you? I got to mark where I left them. Yeah, okay. It was October 1972. The executive officer at the United States Military Academy telephoned the Warrens a day before they were scheduled to present a general lecture to the cadets there. Though the officer's comments were deliberately vague, he nonetheless told the Warrens that a curious security problem had arisen, and he wanted to know if they'd be willing to help in a professional capacity before they lectured the next day at the point. Without probing, the Warrens agreed to lend assistance. Good, the relieved officer said. I'll send a car for you tomorrow at 3 p.m. I wonder if the Pentagon knows about this. Be interesting. Or the chiefs of staff. The following afternoon, a shiny black limousine bearing government plates pulled up outside the Warrens' front door. Ed and Lorraine, dressed in evening clothes for the lecture they were going to give to the cadets on this subject, slid into the roomy back seat. The chauffeur, an Army staff sergeant, told them the drive would take about 1 hour, but volunteered no other information. This is West Point, my friends. Moving north along the Taconic Parkway through occasional snow showers, the limousine nevertheless kept up a steady pace of 60 miles an hour. A little past 4 p.m., they entered the gates of the United States Military Academy. The sergeant pulled the car up to the entrance of the headquarters office, swung open the rear door, and escorted the Warrens to the executive officer of West Point. Major Donald Bowling, an orderly, good-natured man, offered Ed and Lorraine a seat in his office. He then briefed them on an already prepared schedule, dinner with the officers of the faculty at 6, followed by a general lecture to all classes at 8. One more thing. For the next few minutes, Major Bowling went on to explain how an unaccountable breach of security was occurring in the home of West Point's superintendent, the commanding general. It was 1972. Naturally, the military police had already been over the problem. But to no avail, he conceded. Matters had only gotten worse. Therefore, it had been decided to get an outside opinion on a problem that appeared to have no natural explanation. So if there's no objection, the superintendent, he said, would like to speak with you before dinner. We'll be glad to help, Ed replied. Do you know the nature of the problem? Between us, the major almost broke into a grin, there's a ghost in the general's quarters. Switching off the lights, the executive officer took his cap, escorted the Warrens out of the office door, and introduced them to an Army photographer who sat waiting in the hallway. Strict limits had been placed on the collection of information that day. All documentary records would be the property of the U.S. government. Outside, the call of cadences broke the silence as cadets marched through the gray stillness of the afternoon. The group took a leisurely stroll to the superintendent's quarters, known officially as the Sylvanus Thayer Mansion, an impressive brick structure built in the federal style. A general staff aide answered the front door to the mansion, showed the group inside. Within moments, the commanding general and his wife entered the foyer, and the executive officer introduced them to Warrens. The general's wife directed everyone to a sitting room. It was beautifully furnished with period antiques by previous generals over the course of 2 centuries. Nothing macabre has happened here, the general said, sitting in what appeared to be his favorite chair. Nevertheless, a number of incidents have gone on in this house that so far no one has been able to explain to my satisfaction. Some background. In the basement, there is a private study. That room is kept locked and secure. But no matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart. Shades of that crypt in the Bermuda Triangle. No matter how many times, that room is kept locked and secure. But no matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart later. Ah, oh, foot. Now, Dallas wasn't with us when we went through that crypt with the dancing caskets. No matter how many times the bunk in there is made up, it's always found ripped apart later. Upstairs, ghosts have been seen flitting about the house. These I haven't seen, the general said, but they've been reported for years, and apparently they go with the billet. Now, I wouldn't mention anything of this except that we have an unusual, persistent problem. Personal belongings and other important articles are regularly found missing. Not stolen, he emphasized, but missing temporarily. Am I boring you? The general stopped for a moment to put on his glasses. I grant you, he says, none of this is terribly important unless you put it into perspective. One of the responsibilities of the commanding officer here is social protocol. In this house, we receive our fair share of government leaders and army brass. Recently, on special occasions, some potentially serious events have occurred. Wallets have been stolen. Pockets have been picked. Money and personal mementos have been taken from eminent dignitaries and their wives. Later, all the stolen items are found upstairs, neatly laid out on the dresser in our master bedroom. The Warrens sat mum, taking in the unique nature of the problem. This foolishness cannot continue, the general said forcefully. Yet we know that no person has committed these actions. So my question to you, Mr. Warren or Mrs. Warren, is the following. If this is a ghost, and I stress if it is, then you tell me, can a ghost manipulate physical objects? Ed answered. Now, I want you to understand, I want you to understand that that's West Point calling this. You can read so many paperback, fruity things of people getting half-baked messages from outer space until you can turn off on all of it. I'm just saying, like I said about the pyramid. There's too much in that passageway to rule it out. It hit too many dates to not be concerned about what it says about the dates yet to come. Well, I think I got you concerned about the dates yet to come in the pyramid. If I don't, I don't need to ever go back to it. There's simply too much evidence for Atlantis to just write it off. There's too much evidence of strange goings-on in the Bermuda Triangle and around the 35th parallel of the Azores to write it off. And I believe there is a gestalt that ties it all together. I think part of the problem is looking at them in isolation. And demonology. It's like parapsychology. Parapsychology for years was ridiculed by scientists. Cornell University and others began to study it. And to those that took the time to pay attention to extrasensory perception, or parapsychology as they call it, it finally settled in. There's too much evidence to say it doesn't happen. The question is no longer, does it happen? But how and what manner? Now, demons. Avoiding the passageway. Let's go back to Ed. I only took him to West Point to give him some credibility beyond the Ghostbuster of the Yucatan. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door of the office and ran up the back steps of the house. he would be too late. Upstairs. Are you interested in this at all? I mean, I don't want to ruin your whole Sunday night. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door to the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Upstairs. Upstairs, Lorraine Warren sat in bed reading the biography of Padre Pio, a remarkable monk who many believe is destined for sainthood. No matter how exhausted, Lorraine nevertheless will not sleep when Ed must work alone late at night in the office. After a lifetime of work in the supernatural, both Ed and Lorraine Warren know they're never alone, ever. I wish I could get you all to realize that. Ed and Lorraine Warren know they are never alone, ever. As Lorraine sat quietly reading, a dreadful pall swept over the room. Then, setting the book down, she too realized that something was wrong. Very wrong. I was terror-stricken, Lorraine says, but I didn't know what I was afraid of. I looked around the room, but nothing was there. I then looked down at our two dogs asleep beside the bed. They were absolutely motionless, except the hair on each dog from head to tail was standing straight up in the air. Let's try that again. I was terror-stricken, Lorraine says, but I didn't know what I was afraid of. I looked around the room. There was nothing there. I then looked down at our two dogs, asleep beside the bed. They were absolutely motionless, except the hair on each dog from head to tail was standing straight up in the air. What occurred in the home of Ted and Ellen Donovan between March 3rd and May 2nd, 1974, is classified as a true diabolical attack. Let's get three of them going. The terrible assault that lasted for 60 consecutive days. I try to tell you, you need a dish. You need me in there 24 hours a day. Anyway, what occurred in the home of Ted and Ellen Donovan between March 3rd and May 2nd, 1974, is classified as a true diabolical attack. The terrible assault that lasted for 60 consecutive days came to an abrupt halt with the exorcism conducted in the house on May 2nd, 1974. Say, what's an exorcism? It's what Jesus did when he drove the demons out of that demoniac boy by the Lake of Galilee in the territory of the Gadarenes. The case and all its particulars are now a matter of record. In his own files, Ed Warren retains a statement written by Ted Donovan's brother, who himself was an involuntary witness to the phenomena in the home. "I," he says, "nor anyone else in my family, have ever before witnessed or actually experienced anything so weird and terrifying. I am sure the impact of that obscure experience shall remain with my frightened children and wife indefinitely. The incomprehensible predicament that we have witnessed leaves our frightened family group in complete bewilderment. At least for the present time, it defies all rational and logical explanations. All the tangible evidence and facts related to the preternatural mysteriousness of those events witnessed by our family group should be laid bare and then rationally reviewed by competent people who are experienced in these weird and perplexing matters. When and if a review is completed, I firmly believe that the ultimate conclusions will eventually suggest that unearthly powers or influences were at work. Philip Donovan." March 3rd, 1974. We're not leaving anybody at 12, are we? No, we're in good shape. On March 3rd, 1974, Mr. Theodore Donovan, age 50, made a note on the kitchen calendar. His daughter Patty's car had just gotten a flat tire on a trip to the drugstore. Pouring himself another Sunday morning cup of coffee, Ted Donovan could hardly have imagined that this seemingly ordinary event, the note, on the kitchen calendar, was the beginning of an all-out siege by violent, inhuman spirits that would begin with acts of vandalism and end in the near total destruction of his small ranch house. Hell would break loose in the Donovan household. Because the night before, 19-year-old Patty Donovan had crossed the line. She invited a demonic spirit to manifest. Though the deceived girl gave this permission unwittingly, she nevertheless committed a supernatural transgression of the highest order. What resulted was perhaps the worst case of diabolical attack the Warrens have ever experienced. Shall I continue?
Yes.
The actual beginning of the case would have to be dated a year earlier, though, Ed states. That's when Patty began using the Ouija board. In this day and age, her motive for seeking spirit communication was somewhat understandable.
This is the end of side 3. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side 4. Thank you.